This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch our TV show on Free Speech TV, airing weekdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. The Department of Transportation this week released a long-awaited set of federal policy guidelines on driverless or self-driving cars. The guidelines came just months after a high-profile fatal accident of a Tesla car whose driver was using its autopilot feature. A number of companies are racing to develop and test driverless cars, including Google, Uber, Tesla, Nissan, and others. The industry and government claims that auto safety and sustainability are at the heart of the push for the new technologies. Indeed, car accidents account for nearly 35,000 deaths annually nationwide. Globally, the number is a whopping 1.2 million. My guest is Jamie Court. He's the president of Consumer Watchdog, and he's also written the book, The Progressive's Guide to Raising Hell, How to Win Grassroots Campaign, Pass Ballot Box Laws, and Get the Change You Voted For. Welcome to the program, Jamie.
It's great to see you again, Sonali. Thanks.
So first, let's talk about what exactly these technologies are. It's such a new thing, and yet there are already cars on the streets. I understand in Pittsburgh, Uber has already begun these testing these self-driving cars. You can get a ride in a self-driving car, but yet there is no real regulation. What do you make of these federal policy guidelines? Not a regulation, but sort of a set of guidelines within which these companies now have to, you know, or what these companies have to do to keep in mind to develop these cars. Is this strong enough?
Well, they're really not anything more than a blueprint, because this administration is going to end pretty soon. But they have been hotly contested, and we've been on the federal transportation officials for months now to try to make real enforceable rules. And what's good is that they listened in the sense that the Department of Transportation, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, have come up with a blueprint for the future that they admittedly will not be able to implement, but they say, look, there are these 15 points that these cars have to pass before they go on the roads at different levels of automation. We should have federal motor vehicle safety standards for many of them, and that means we'll be able to recall the cars. We're going to have a public rulemaking process with experts and consumer groups to develop the standards, and we're not going to preempt state laws. So states like California, where we have a law that says, you know, if you got a, you're testing a driverless car, you got to have a driver in the seat. There's got to be a steering wheel, a brake, an accelerator. A human has to take over. That kind of protocol stands. And in fact, Uber in Philadelphia, in Pittsburgh, is testing with a driver in the car, which is what we want. So I think, you know, this is an amazing technology, but the testing we've done in California has shown that in hundreds of thousands of miles driven in driverless cars, with human beings there to take over, about 350 times the computer had to give back the controls to the human being because they're not ready. They don't do well with weather. They don't do well with potholes. They don't do well, as we saw in the crash with Tesla in Florida, with colors. The camera didn't see a big white semi-truck sprawled right in front of it. And this Navy SEAL died as a result. And the radar didn't detect this big semi-truck because it shot under the truck because the truck was too high. So two systems failed. So all we're seeing is speed kills, and we need to go slower and develop the rules in an open, transparent process. And the one thing that was done here is making this process open and transparent. We have 60 days to comment on the blueprint. Then we're going to have an election. They're going to start all over. They're going to look at the blueprint, and hopefully whoever the next administration is actually going to develop real rules in a real rulemaking proceeding, weighing a testimony from consumer groups like ours, robotics experts, and the automakers. The danger here was this was all going to be done very quickly behind closed doors with no opportunity for real rulemaking. And we were able to stave that off.
And Jamie, it does make sense that these companies wouldn't coordinate with one another, because of course, when human beings drive on the streets in cars, we interact with one another. We have eyes that work similar to one another. Our sense of distance is similar, and so our instincts are similar. And bunches of people driving on cars together depend on that. And so in the same way, when you have cars that have these radars and these guidance systems, if they aren't compatible with one another, there's no way for this to work, right?
Yeah, and that's one of the real failings of these cars is they don't see human hand gestures. So if a traffic cop puts up a stop sign with his hands rather than a red stop sign, a driverless car, they won't be able to detect it. And so we learned all this through the testing in California, which is why the Department of Motor Vehicles here said you got to have a human driver. They're ready to take over. And that's the big challenge. Driverless cars will be deployed quicker if they were isolated from the rest of the human drivers, if they had their own lane, their own infrastructure, their own roadway. Experts say that's the only way to really do it. And if they have what we call vehicle-to-vehicle communication, V2V, is a technology. And one of the things that came out of this blueprint is that they are going to have a rulemaking proceeding this fall with vehicle-to-vehicle technology. So cars will actually talk to each other. That works well when there's no human being struggling with the computer to talk with the other driver in the other car. If you take humans out of the equation, these cars can be on a roadway working relatively efficiently much quicker. But we all want to be in cars, and many of us will have to be in cars because this technology is pretty expensive right now. And so if you have robot cars on the road with human drivers, that's when you have just the opportunity for havoc. And that's something until this year that Google and some of these other car makers didn't want to acknowledge. They wanted to act like, oh, we can just put these cars on the road and it'll all work. Now there's actually a backlash after the Tesla crash, after another crash in China we found out about through Chinese television that happened in January. There's actually footage at our website, consumerwatchdog.org. You can see what it looks like from the car's point of view as someone plows right into a street sweeper on a highway because the Tesla's autopilot didn't see the street sweeper. The camera didn't work in the fog. And you start to see this, and you're like, wait a second. You know, we've got to go a little slower. We've got to be more deliberative, and we've got to get these technologies through a public process. So I think with the vehicle communication, with that vehicle, the Tesla would have talked to the street sweeper. And that all works well, but it's going to take a lot of planning. This is no panacea.
So that said, however, playing devil's advocate, we live in a world where way too many people already die in car accidents, you know, driven by humans for a variety of reasons, drunk driving, or distracted driving, weather conditions, etc. People just not paying attention, or even car failures, normal car failures. Those numbers are staggering. Nearly 35,000 in this country, 1.2 million worldwide. And if humans driving cars have such high fail rates, is it possible that we would reduce those numbers, even halve them, with a transition to driverless cars?
That's the selling point, that these are going to be safer. We're not going to have as many fatalities because robots do things better, but we're going to have different types of deaths. And I don't think society is ready for that. You know, even if the fatality rate were lower, if a driver, you or I going down the road, we see a child, we're going to swerve out of the way. We don't know what's going to happen. We're going to try to save that child's life. We might hit a telephone pole and kill ourselves. Who's going to program that robot car to make that choice? Will they steer away from the child, or will they not, having some kind of knowledge that maybe the driver themselves would be killed if that happens? These are really weighty questions. So even if you reduce the number of deaths, I don't think we're willing as a society, as a culture, for our social mores and our ethical customs to accept that computers and frankly, corporations, car makers, make those choices about who lives and who dies. When there's an auto accident now.
So Jamie,
sorry, go ahead,
what is it for the car companies? What are they motivated by? I mean, if Google and Uber, Tesla, and all of these companies, I mean, Google is not even a car company. Uber is supposed to be a ride-sharing company, but they're clearly in this, and they're racing ahead to develop this technology. I can't imagine that they're purely in it for safety and sustainability. Is this just a new vista that they're hoping to make truckloads of cash with?
And so for Google, actually, it's about data. Google's leading this because they know that when you have these driverless cars on the road, there's an amazing amount of data collection, not only about the driver and the car and where they go, but about everything around them. And they really want to map the world. They are not... Google is a company that makes 97% of its money off advertising revenue, and they know the more they know about you, the more they can sell you, and the better they can sell you, and the better they can sell access to you, And if they can get this unbelievably surveilled view of the world where everybody is all the time, they can charge corporations to reach you at a certain place at a certain time, and it's going to make them a lot of money. So this isn't about sustainability. In fact, the irony is most of these driverless cars are not EV vehicles. They're not electric vehicles because they need to go too many miles in the day to recharge. So they're not, everybody thinks they're going to be sustainable, but it's not even clear that that's true. I think that, you know, for trucking companies, this is a lot about displacing workers and making it cheaper. For the rest of the car makers, you know, they see the other car makers doing it, and they feel like they have to. But Google is really the one that's saying, we don't want a steering wheel, we don't want an accelerator, we want to break in our first generation of cars. They're doing that because they really want to take the control from human beings, get us into that world really quickly, and then have really a monopoly on marketing us in that world. And they're using technology to propel us there. And I think that's a dangerous place to be. Some of the other car makers have accepted that we need to go a little slower, we need to have an intermediary step, and we also need to have safety protocols and, frankly, limits on our data collection. That is something that has to go hand in hand with these federal rules. If we're going to have vehicle-to-vehicle communication, limit on cybersecurity, we need a limit on what kind of data is going to become public and where that data is going to go. So a lot of this is data collection.
What about Uber? I mean, Uber is a ride-sharing company, and there have been so many battles between drivers and Uber to, you know, just paid Uber drivers well. Is Uber's motivation to cut drivers out of the equation altogether so that they just don't have to pay them anymore?
Absolutely. Uber sees this as a way of cutting the driver out of their ride-sharing. Then it doesn't really become a ride-share, does it? It becomes more like a taxi company and an unautomated taxi company. And so it really raises questions about whether this is, you know, about sharing. And I guess we are going to be sharing cars, but we're certainly not going to be having the labor equation there. I mean, a lot of this is about saving money. And for Uber, which is not great for its worker practices, it's about getting rid of those workers.
And then I have this sort of broader question, Jamie, which is that if the future involves us getting into driverless cars with other passengers so that we're essentially, you know, riding mini buses, isn't this ultimately going to be, you know, public transportation? I mean, why not? Shouldn't the government take all of the effort that they're putting into this technology and instead put it into strengthening, improving, bettering our public transportation, especially if we're talking about safety and sustainability? I mean, if I could ride the train to, you know, work or to get groceries, et cetera, every day, I would probably be saving gas. I'd probably be safer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that from the 10,000-foot view, absolutely, this should be a government means of public transportation, and technology should be captured for such. But where we are in America right now, it's just not likely to happen. I think that the promise of a car that you don't have to own, you don't have to maintain, and that can show up where you want, and take you where you want, and you pay a little money, that's just too good for too many corporations in this type of capitalist economy. And I think the government's not even conceiving of itself as a player. However, there are some trials going on, one in California that we worked to put some safeguards in to make it safe and protect the public, where in a business park, for instance, they are trying a self-driving people mover on some public roads in place of a bus. But again, this is also a way of potentially displacing bus drivers. I mean, if I were Teamsters, if I were public employee unions, I'd be very concerned about the rapid deployment of this technology as a way of saving money and cutting out workers. So there are these balancing acts. Right now, we're all goo-goo gaga over the Uber cars in Pittsburgh that don't need drivers, even though there are drivers there to make sure they don't go haywire. And I think it's going to be a long time before these technology is proved safe enough to be deployed on a widespread basis. And then we have the infrastructure, the separate roadways to make them work safely. They say 2021 right now is when the first truly driverless cars will come out that don't need a human being there. I don't buy that. And I think it's going to be a lot longer before we even figure a way to have a separate infrastructure where there's widespread usage of them. I mean, we're going to talk about 15, 20 years.
And speaking of Pittsburgh, it's highly ironic that Uber drivers sitting behind the wheels of the driverless cars are essentially helping to test technology that will make them obsolete. What would you want to see if you had the chance to make certain demands? And I know that, for example, Consumer Watchdog has written a letter to Uber in California asking 10 questions that should be answered. Specifically, what do you want to see these companies deploying this technology to abide by?
Well, first of all, we think that all the data that they collect, all the incidents of accidents, all the incidents of disengagements from the technology need to be made public. If we have full transparency and sunshine on all the adverse problems with these cars, then we'll be able to develop them safely in the appropriate timeline and to deploy them safely and to make sure that the data itself isn't being used in a way that surveils us as a people and as a society. And so we found out an immense amount of information about the failures of the robot cars when California was forced to make public what we call disengagement reports. When Google would test these driverless cars over the last couple of years, Google did not want to make this data public. It filed a Public Records Act request. DMV made all this information public, and we found out hundreds of times and hundreds of thousands of miles driven, the cars weren't able to handle without human help. We need the same type of data out of Pittsburgh from Uber, even though there's no regulation governing it. Because when you look at the reasons these cars fail, you can actually get a sense of what technology is, not just the hype that the industry's spewing and that government, frankly, is buying. One of the big problems is, the four of the top people leading the driverless car lobby right now at this national Traffic Highway Transportation Administration are former NHTSA officials, high-ranking officials. There's a big revolving door at NHTSA, and the four top lobbyists for the driverless car lobby came from NHTSA recently, and the two top officials who issued these guidelines, the Secretary of Transportation Fox and NHTSA Administrator Mark Rosenkind, have refused to answer a letter we wrote 6 months ago saying, promise not to work for the driverless car lobby for the next 7 years. So, the regulators see what they want to see. In this case, they did a decent job of balancing the interests of safety and the interests of innovation. The next group, who knows?
Jamie, give out a website for Consumer Watchdog.
It's consumerwatchdog.org, and we are also we also have an app in the iPhone and Google stores.
And we'll post that to our website later today. Jamie, thank you so much.
Thank you. Jamie Sonali.
Jamie Court is president of Consumer Watchdog and author of The Progressive's Guide to Raising Hell. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can find our interviews online at risingupwithsonali.com and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.